With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Almost Famous, the podcast where I explore the subject of fame by talking to people who've experienced it themselves and ask them how it has affected their own journey, as well as the lives of those around them. My guest today is presenter Sam Homewood. Sam fronts ITV's flagship kids' weekend breakfast show, Scrambled, and is about to be one of the presenters on a reboot of the iconic educational kids' TV show, How. Sam has also presented on ITV2's Love Island After Sun and is the host of the United podcast for Manchester United's official channel MUTV, as well as working on music channel 4 Music. Sam got into presenting having earned a master's degree in journalism, with which he secured a job at ITN, and he has since gone on to present for television, radio, digital, and numerous live events, including a range of international music festivals. I'm sure Sam's biggest ever credit on his CV, though, is when he hosted the Football Republic's World Cup halftime quiz with yours truly back in 2018, so it's a great honour to give a huge Almost Famous welcome to Sam Homewood. How are you, Sam?
I'm great. Also, that was so much fun. That World Cup and doing that quiz was so much fun.
Mate, it was, for the audience who don't know, I produced and every so often presented on a football channel called The Football Republic, and we got this very late on brand deal with Panasonic to give away a expensive TV every World Cup day. And so we'd made this little quiz and Sam hosted it with me, and it was amazing fun, and almost as fun as about 2 days later when they sacked me.
Oh, yeah, that was the horrible bit, wasn't it? Because it was so much fun. And it was like every day of the World Cup, we were watching the games together, and then like giving away a TV is a fun thing to do, and doing it like every day. And there were so many games and it was joyous. And then that happened and kind of spoiled it a bit, didn't it? I imagine more so for you than me, if I'm honest.
slightly more so for me, yeah. But it wasn't, the good news is it wasn't anything to do with the fact that we ran that quiz. The quiz went really, really, in fact, that was one of the weird things about losing my job, is the day before a whole email had gone round the entire company being like, this has been the most successful digital World Cup thing on the internet in the like digital football channels. We're so proud of you guys. And then the next day, like, yeah, we're going to take the channel in a different direction.
Yeah, weird. People are weird with the internet.
People are very weird. But more importantly, Sam, mm-hmm. I always ask my guests this. Did I miss anything out of your intro? How was it?
Embarrassingly, I knew you were going to ask me that. And I had pre-prepared a stupid answer, which was...
Mate. All that means is you've listened to this before, and I'm very happy about that.
Of course. The only thing, and I thought when he asked, I'll have to point out I've broken 11 world records, and then instantly point out that all of them are ridiculous, so that it doesn't count for anything, but I find it hilarious. And as someone who loved world records when I was a kid, as an adult, it's something I don't let go of as much as I should.
Yeah. So the only question I have to ask about, well, I have a few actually. The first one, which may surprise you, is having been on your agent's website, why is that not top, right at the very top of all your CV on your agent's website?
Good question. I will address this tomorrow.
Yes, so you should. And obviously the audience would hate me if I didn't say, please name all 11 world records.
Right. That might be difficult, but I will try. So... the most balloons sat on and burst in 30 seconds. Some of them don't make any sense. Like, that's obviously stupid and novelty, but at least it makes sense. This one makes no sense. The most pancakes filled and wrapped in like a minute or something. Okay. And that involved not making pancakes or tossing pancakes, but putting fruit inside them, putting a sauce inside them, and then folding them over so they didn't rip.
Right.
I don't understand why that's a thing. There was the most emoji cards paired. So you know, like the game Pairs, where you turn over a card, then you have to turn it back on itself, and then you pick up another card, like the speed at which you can match them up. So it's sort of like a memory game. I was part of a team that collected the most coins on a game of Mario Kart. Okay. There was four of us, and we collected like 50 something coins. So between the four of us, it should have been like 16 each or something. And I think I collected three, because I'm not good at that.
I now regret asking for all 11, and I think you're going to be glad that I'm going to stop you. But I'm assuming that this is as part of your work on Scrambled.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. All rubbish, ridiculous, stupid things. The only one I am genuinely proud of is the fastest time to assemble a Mr. Potato Head blindfolded. Did that in 15 seconds.
Was it a matter of, you know, brainstorming with the production team?
No, you just
get world records.
This is what we're doing. So I think what happens is Guinness World Records, obviously, they want you to have a go at breaking a world record. And it's because it's TV, they should be silly. So I think they try to find ones that are attainable. And a lot of them, if you watched all the same programs, like Blue Peter will have a go at a record, and then maybe 2 months later we'll have a go at the same one. And it's sort of, or the other way around. And it's sort of, they all go round, I think, because they're all the things that any sort of normal idiot can have a go at.
Yeah, got it. Totally got it. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll get more into kids' TV very soon, actually. Because also, I'm especially interested because my first job in TV was at CBBC. So I worked in kids' TV as well. And I think it's often slightly underrated and maybe even slightly scorned upon medium. But I think it's very important and often very good. But again, going back to my formatted question, Sam Homewood, are you famous?
No. I would say considerably not so. The closest arguments that are made are when people I'm with have to explain to other people why they think I am famous, which is always incredibly awkward and not at all fun to be stood there going, yeah, no, he's on telly. What's he on then? Oh, he's on this program. So if I meet people that I don't know and they ask me what I do, often I will lie.
And you will say what then?
If they know I work in television, often I will claim I'm an editor because nobody's interested in an editor. It's unfortunately true. My little brother is an editor. I've done editing. People very rarely ask you too much about it. And it's not because like I'm embarrassed. I don't want to talk about it. But sometimes I think, I don't know, people, maybe it's me, people will expect something from you that I maybe can't give. I don't know if that makes any sense, but often I wonder if people think, oh, well, you're on tour, who are you then? Or do you know what? Sometimes what's worse is people apologize to you for knowing who you are. And that's awkward too. So I don't always tell people. Sometimes it's easier.
So the first thing that came into my head hearing that was, I wonder then, is there an element in you that, or have you ever thought that potentially by doing that, you are in some way lessening your chances of becoming, say, you know, a huge TV presenter who everyone knows about? Because in a great deal of those cases, it's very much kind of extrovert people who are very proud of what they do and want to push it as much as they can and network very hard and stuff like that. Or is it nothing to do with that, and you think that's very possible anyway?
It's a difficult one. It's a really good question. I think I would see myself as like classic middle child. I have three brothers. I have three brothers and one of four. And I think probably as a child, I was like a big time show off who wanted as much attention as I could possibly get. And that was probably true for most of my life. But I think a weird thing happened when I started working in telly, in that I think maybe what I didn't necessarily want was attention, but I loved performing. And I loved being creative and having an audience. And you sort of get that. And maybe I sort of get my fill of that from doing TV. So actually, I think it's not always true. And I'm sure lots of people who know me would disagree. I think I'm actually not shy, but much more quiet often in real life than I sometimes am. Because you get to go and do all those crazy things and have all that fun. You don't need to do it 24/7. Maybe that's not true as I've said that. Maybe people would think that's a load of rubbish. And actually, I'm just really loud all the time.
No,
I don't know.
That's not actually what you give off to me off camera, because I've obviously worked with you off and on camera. So no, that does make sense. From a personal point of view, I wonder, I'd like to kind of compare Because I would say, and I've said on this podcast before, that actually, if I'd have been able to be honest with myself from the ages of maybe 16 through my 20s, I would say, actually, I, A, would like to be a presenter, and B, think I could be quite a good presenter. And I had a few little dalliances with it, like I had a screen test for a couple of things. But I was always slightly ashamed of saying it out loud, because especially back then, I think, there was always a feeling to me of like almost like it's quite grotty to suggest you'd want to be a presenter. Almost like it's, yeah, going back to what you said about, is it just saying I want to be a show off, I want to be paid for just saying stuff, and it's deemed not to be as talented a role as something else. Now, did you ever feel any of that, or did you kind of stumble into the job?
No. So I literally stumbled into the job. That is definitely true. But when I was at school and at secondary school and stuff, I think this was a thing I always thought I could do. And to an extent, it's a thing I always thought I would do, with no plan to it, though. Like, I never went, I'm going to be a TV presenter, here's how I'm going to do it. But if I was sat by myself and thought about my options, it was always one of them. But I don't know why. And I, you know, I didn't necessarily look to loads of, I didn't watch TV and be like, oh, that's how you do that, and that's how you do that, and I'd like to do that. It just always felt like an option. And it's weird to say that, because it's not really realistically, it's low, like, it's not that big an option to most people. The thing I wanted to do that I wouldn't say out loud, and it's probably still true, is I wanted to do comedy.
Okay.
And I have never done stand-up, and I think that's the thing. When I was younger, I worked out that I was funny and that I could make people laugh, and I always thought, oh, that's really cool, I'd love to do stand-up. And I have never once like properly pursued it. And that was the thing. And when I was like 18 and like people, you know, getting ready to be university and stuff, I'd say, oh, what do you want to do? There was always a part of me that just wanted to go, do you know, I'd like to be a comedian. But I never felt like that was a thing you can say, because it's you're sort of making a statement about yourself before you've done anything.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, especially good point for me, because I've done 8 years of stand-up, and the difference is that when I was at university, I very much remember having conversations with people about stand-up, and I would say, I'd love to do it, but I could never do it as myself. I only ever thought I'd be able to do it as a character. And actually, when I did kind of 10 years later finally start doing it, I did do it as myself, although you always find a persona depending on what your material is, etc., etc. So having now made the, you know, as having made the jump into presenting, or had that made that your career, which I always deemed to be a harder thing to say out loud, what has then stopped you from then saying, well, I've succeeded at this and I'm successful at this, so why don't I try stand-up? Or would that be too much of a having to start all over again type thing?
It's a bit of both, is the honest answer. I think because also sometimes when I go for meetings with production companies or commissioners at channels and stuff, they're sort of saying, you know what, you know, we've got this show, we want a comedian to host it. And I know you mentioned earlier I did Love Island After Sun, and I was very lucky to get that opportunity, because they wanted, for that role, because I was running around, you know, most people wouldn't have seen it, I was running around in the street with a microphone just sort of screaming at people and having conversations, and it was all a bit manic and mad and fast, and they wanted a comedian for it. And sometimes I'll meet people and they go, yeah, we've got the show, we want a comedian to do it. And I'll go, well, I'm not a comedian, I think I'm funny, but I'm not a comedian. They go, yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? So we're gonna, so you sort of think, well, I should do it. So I have sort of made efforts. Like, I've spoken to you know, Glenn Moore.
Yeah, by name, not personally.
Yeah, so I've spoken to him. He's a writer on Scrambled. And I've spoken to him about that, and you know, and he's given me some advice, and he gave me some contacts, and I did get in touch with some people, but never really got a lot going. And it's one of those things where, sort of to an extent, it's like, well, I don't want to distract from what I've got chasing something else, because actually I'm working really hard as much as I can to do more of what I'm already doing.
Yeah.
I try to work constantly. I don't feel like I'm ever not really focused on what I'm doing, because, you know, there's no real goal in being a TV presenter, but I'm driven to achieving more of it.
Of course, and it's a career.
There's a part of me, yeah, exactly that, yeah. And so there's a part of me that is like, well, do you know, maybe I could have done stand-up, that'd been fun, but you know what? I don't want to spend the next 7 years doing those tiny venues and trying to get around, when actually, as a presenter, I've stood live in front of 40,000 people. So maybe, you know, take the role I've got and, you know, have fun where I can and be funny where I can. And, but, you know, don't try and rebrand myself and start doing stand up, I guess, is sort of what I thought.
It's funny that you said 7 years, because actually, in general, I think the years, it is usually about 7 years before you ever see anyone on TV. There are some exceptions, but from stand ups kind of starting to ever actually getting through. You are one of the loveliest men. I'm not just saying this because you're on my podcast. You are actually one of the loveliest men I've met. So I know that you might not feel comfortable answering this question, but I feel like I want to ask, how do you feel when you watch stand ups come and do TV presenting, and you know that you've had those conversations with producers where they're like, well, we want a stand-up to do this, and is there any element of you that's like, you don't know this craft, but you're being thrown in, and therefore it's a bit of a like, fuck you for coming and stepping on my turf kind of thing?
No, brutally honestly, no, because I think often the people that get those roles, so if you say like Rob Beckett on Celebs Go Dating, for example, just, he's doing the voiceover stuff, he's really good at it. And I totally get why they want comedians in those roles. He's really good at it. Joel Lycett does stuff. He's brilliant at it. The only thing that I ever think is sometimes if someone has that viewpoint is I think, I totally get it. You want someone funny, but maybe open the door a little bit to being, it has, you know, you need to say occupation comedian. Just you know, because other people can be funny too.
So you've just come up with two examples there. Sorry to interrupt, but you just come up with two examples. I'd say Rob Beckett thing is slightly different because the voiceover role is so involved in tone. So I think that all comes back down to Dave Lamb having done Come Dine With Me and how big that was, etc. Now, an example I'm going to give, and he's also a very lovely man. I haven't seen him for years, but Joel Dommett doing The Masked Singer, right? That, to me, is an example of, he's a comedian. He'd never done such a big, you know, it's a primetime show.
Yeah.
He's doing what I would say is a presenter's job with possibly a few little monologue gags thrown in. I would argue, potentially, that there are presenters out there, and I'm not just saying you because you're on this podcast, but there are presenters out there who, if I were in their shoes, I'd be a bit like, why is this guy getting this slot? Do you know what I mean? Yes, I guess he was on I'm a Celeb. I get that, wasn't he? That's... He did reality. Yeah. But that's the kind of, you know, that's what I'm talking about more, that kind of, especially prime time stuff where you've spent your life trying to, your career, you know, your professional life, working your way up to hopefully get an opportunity like that. And then potentially a comedian comes in, goes on a reality show and suddenly is thrust into those kind of jobs. Is that not slightly frustrating, or am I barking up an invisible tree?
It's not. No, I completely understand the point you're making. It's not something I find frustrating because I can see how it happens. Like, so I think if you want to host like a Saturday night evening show on ITV or BBC, before the craft, you need to pull people in. So you need to be a big enough name. You need to be a big enough person in people's living rooms that when they see you, they're like, great, love this guy. And then I think the rest to an extent comes after. And that's a bit like in a, I don't know, this is maybe a really weird example, like in a boy band or something. If they can all dance, they all look great. The singing isn't the most important thing.
No, totally. Plenty of examples proving that down the years.
Yeah. And to an extent, it's a bit like that. And I, you know, hopefully one day my chance will come and I'll ride a wave and there'll be my profile will rise over time and those opportunities will come and then hopefully I'll do great. And that's sort of it. And, you know, hopefully Joel it does great and people watch it and they think he's superb. And I think it's just, you know, everybody, I guess, will get the opportunities to get their opportunities, hopefully.
Yeah. And so I have to ask this then, because I've gone down that avenue. Would you, well, two-part question. A, have you been offered any kind of reality stuff? And B, would you go on something like The Jungle, etc., like that, to raise your profile? Is that something you'd be interested in?
I would definitely do it because, one, I think it would be really fun.
Yeah.
And two, obviously, from a working perspective, it's very useful. But it would be really fun. And the only thing that I'd be rubbish at is because I'm vegan, like all the bush chucker trials and stuff wouldn't. It'd be like, will you eat this sprout?
Have they never had a vegan on there? I've never thought about that.
I think they've had some, but not loads.
I remember remember very enjoyably the woman who would just faint at everything and then was fake fainting. Which one was that?
She's
The one who
Gillian
went...
McKeith.
Gillian McKeith, yeah, excellent.
She was always
TV.
Looking at people's poo, wasn't she?
That was her. That's her claim to fame.
Yeah.
And then she went on there
the
and was very clearly faking her own fainting, which is very funny.
That was the end of her career, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I do, you know, not to bang on about it, Sam, but you do seem like just a genuinely straight up guy, and I do think kind of knowing the egos involved in comedians and a lot of presenters and stuff, I think you're in the minority in terms of answering those questions in such a sane, I'll get my opportunity if I work hard enough kind of way, because there are so many people, I've been in so many cars with comedians, for example, on the way back from gigs where they're, you know, they're so angry at other comedians for getting opportunities that they felt they should get first, etc., etc. So it's a refreshing take, Sam.
Well, I mean, I think generally I'm quite positive anyway. Mm. Like I'm just sort of built that way that, you know, that's okay. But the other thing is, do you know, there's the old expressions like a rising tide lifts all ships. And I think things like that are true. Like there's maybe not enough work for everybody to get all the work they want. Mm. But I mean, even if something drastic happened and I didn't get to do anything again, if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, I mean, I've still done loads of cool stuff that loads of people would want to do.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, there's a bit of perspective. And also you're right. I think about, it's difficult because some people do, in this industry, certainly people are very prone to blowing smoke at you.
Yeah.
I've rephrased that slightly because I didn't want to say arse. and I think I've never really been one for that. I've always find that a bit uncomfortable. I like if people are giving feedback on set or something, I'd rather someone is. And like, say, if I work with a director who's brilliant, because if I do something that he thinks is wrong or I word something badly, he'd be like, that was rubbish. Let's do that again, you idiot. And it's not, there's no offense.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Taken, but it's much better than someone going, obviously that was amazing, that was absolutely perfect, it couldn't have been better than what we wanted, but we are going to do it again, but this time you're brilliant, be just as brilliant, but maybe do it this way brilliant instead of the way you did it, which was also brilliant. And I think some people find it harder to see through that and get a bit more I don't know if you've seen that, they get a bit more caught up in it. And it's I know you said before, and talking about people's experiences that are negative of criticism and stuff, I think that then becomes worse and becomes more personal. If you believe all the good stuff, yes, then you kind of have to believe all the bad stuff.
Yes,
and
totally.
That puts you in a very, very difficult space. Whereas my approach is sort of, if the people I'm working with are happy and I think it's going okay, then perfect. And then if it's received well, great. And if people aren't that interested in it, yeah, it's a shame. But if we had a nice time doing it, then the memories will feed me.
Can you think of any examples where you've known you've done a particularly bad job and someone has come up to you and said, "Great job, Sam." And you're like, "Stop blowing smoke up my ass."
Yeah. Loads of times. But I think I'm quite harsh on myself. And I try to watch, lots of people I think will say, "Oh, I never watch myself." I try to watch things I've done to see how I've done. And sometimes not long ago, I saw some of the clips from when I did Love Island. They were just in front of me on the screen. I was like, "Oh, I'll watch those." And I watched those and I thought, I think I did a really good job at that. And I was really pleased with myself. But not in like a mad egomaniacal way. It's just like gives you a little bit, yeah, you know what, I'm not terrible at this. But I have done some. Like occasionally just on things that you work on a lot. So whether that be at Man United or Scrambled or something, you do a link or something, you think, "Oh, that was not good." And people go, "No, yeah, it was great. Really good, really good." I tell you the worst one I did.
Yeah.
You can find this on YouTube if you want to laugh. I hosted the Amsterdam Music Festival, which was the culmination of the Amsterdam Dance Event, which is a week-long dance music celebration. And this year that I was doing, I did it like 5 or 6 years in a row. This particular year, they decided to integrate the what they call the DJ Mag Top 100 Awards, mm-hmm. Which I guess is if there was a DJ in Oscars, I guess this is it.
Right.
They crowned the number one DJ in the world at this event, and this year I was the host, which is absolutely mad, obviously.
Yeah.
And I was on stage, and there's 40,000 people there, and there's like 3 million people watching online or something. And we're doing the countdown towards the number one DJ in the world. And the way it worked was I would do like, so now we're going to learn who's number 10 to number 5. And like a computer would, like a video even would play, and a voice would announce how it went. And then at number 5, I think I then did 5, 4, 3, 2. And then to do number 1 was the machine was going to come in again, but originally I was going to announce number 1, and it was a very last minute change that it would now be the they were going to announce it, because they were going to time it for like fireworks and not fireworks, but you know, pyrotechnics and all that kind of stuff. So I go, and now we're going to find out who is the number 1 DJ in the world, and that should have been the line, and then the video comes in, and I half started announcing who had won.
Yeah.
Then remembered I'm not supposed to be announcing who has won, so stop speaking. But there was no surprise. Everybody knew who had won, because when you're counting down, there's only one name left. So everybody knew who had won. But I started announcing who had won and then stopped. And not perfect by any means.
It was your Oscars moment.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, it's exactly what it was. So I then
Warren
stopped
Beatty. Sort of halfway
through. Yeah, that was me. Halfway through a name, I just stopped speaking and remember. Then the video plays, and afterwards everyone's like, "That was absolutely amazing, that was incredible." And I was like, "No, it wasn't. I've had an absolute disaster." And they were like, no, it was incredible. And people were like really positive about the whole thing. And I was really grateful. And the people I was working with out there are just the loveliest people. But I was like, "This is no, we all know what happened there."
Yeah, I think the closest I've had to that was, and I may have said this on this podcast as well before, but I went out and lived in LA for a bit and did my first gig at the Comedy Store there, and I got up on stage and I was so nervous that I forgot my own name.
Amazing.
And so, like, I literally was like, "Hi, guys, great to be here, my name's..."
Yep.
And then there was a pause. And my friend, who was just by chance staying in LA at the same time, was there. So I got him to film me, because similarly to you and what you talked about in terms of watching back your stuff, when doing stand-up, the best way to learn is to listen back or watch back your stuff, because you never... You might ad-lib something that becomes a mainstay of your set, etc., etc. Or you learn because of how badly you've been or because you've forgotten your name. But when I came off stage, my mate just went, "Did you forget your name?" And I was like, yeah, I did.
That's amazing.
And you know, and the gig didn't improve from there, frankly. But that was in front of probably 20 people, but 40,000 people, that sounds very scary, Sam.
Yeah, it was. It's probably the kind of story that I shouldn't share, because nobody would know. But yeah, that definitely happened.
That would freak me out. But I think it is worth sharing, because it shows that you're self-aware, and that you learn from these kind of things. I think it's a really good thing to share. I wanted to just briefly talk about children's TV. So how long have you been doing Scrambled for?
2015 2015, I think, was the first series.
Yeah.
I can check that right now. It might have been 2014.
And I wanted to particularly ask about kind of the subject of credibility, because I'd say a lot of presenters... So, like I said, I worked on a magazine show called Exchange on CBBC. I started as a runner.
Oh, I loved Exchange. Yeah. Otis.
Yeah, Otis and... Holly Willoughby was a presenter on it when I was there.
Yeah, of course she was. I forgot about that.
So...
Great show.
I would say, based on my experience, a great deal of the presenters on Exchange when I worked on it were very much using it as a stepping stone. And I would say when you had them off camera, they were a lot more honest. No names, not necessarily the people I just talked about.
Sure.
But they would, you know, they would suggest a little bit, I'm too good for this. I'm using it as a stepping stone. I should be presenting whatever. Now, good that you told us. So 2015, so you've been doing that for 5 years. You're about to start another kids TV show. Yeah. I get the sense with you, from having talked to you before, that you just genuinely enjoy doing kids TV, and it's a job that you love, and so you wouldn't feel that way. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's very true. I also think the landscape of television has changed so much that actually, I worked on Love Island, which is a very adult show, and one that's watched by millions on the same weekends that I was doing children's television for the same network. So I don't think you have to make those choices anymore.
No,
I mean,
that's true.
You can do, and some people do. But I really enjoy it. I love all the people I work with. I think we make a good show. I enjoy making it. And you always want new opportunities.
Yeah.
But it's not. I don't see it I didn't take the job thinking this is a stepping stone. I took the job thinking this will be so much fun. I'm really excited to do this. And so that's how I still feel, so that's why I do it, I guess.
Yeah, and that's probably why they still have you doing it as well. And so do you have a grand plan? I mean, as an example, during lockdown, I found it a very creative time, and I, for the first time, wrote down a kind of list of 10 achievable goals that I wanted to achieve over the next decade. Do you have any kind of TV or presenting or career-based feelings of, this is something I would love to get to, this is something I would love to do?
We should circle back and find out what your list entails.
I would never tell anyone. That's the whole thing about making it.
Okay. Yeah. So so I'll give you a weird example. So I don't think I'm like Dermot O'Leary particularly in any way, shape or form, but I think I really admire him, because I think he's really good at what he does, and I don't know him. But from the outside, it seems like that's all he cares about. He just wants to be great at his job. And I think he is great at his job, but isn't worried. So like when we're talking about fame and stuff, I don't think that's something that interests him. I'm sure there are benefits that he takes advantage of, and why not? And I have no problem with that at all. But he doesn't seem to be someone who's looking for celebrity. He's someone but he's still able to do these big shows. And I think that is what I would like to do. I'd love to get to that point of being able to do, I don't know, The Masked Singer, for example, as an example. But those shows that come in the future, that are those big family shows that are just about everybody having a great time and really enjoying them, and all sort of gathering around the TV. And I don't know how much that happens now, because the landscape for television has changed so much because of things like YouTube and Netflix and the concept of iPlayers and hubs and stuff. But those kind of shows I would love to do. Equally, I work in football, and I genuinely cannot believe that I get to do the things I get to do within the world of football, as someone who has grown up loving it more than anything in like consistently through my life. I've been obsessed with football and Manchester United, and like even now during lockdown, when no one else is going to the games, I still get to go.
Wow.
So I mean, that's not something I'd ever want to stop doing. I don't have a specific goal. I just have goals. And at the moment, none are written down. And it's hard to articulate what they would be. I just am trying to be the best I can be in everything I'm doing. And I'm trying to do more of all of those things.
Yeah, totally. And it's a good point as well. I feel like obviously digital wasn't around, but maybe even 20 years ago, being able to, in a similar way to what you talked about, you know, doing kids stuff and Love Island on the same weekend, you probably wouldn't be able to be a sports presenter and a you know, and a kids presenter and a, you know, entertainment presenter all at the same time. So that is a real positive for you, for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, you sort of don't have to choose. You can just, every opportunity that comes, you can sort of grasp with both hands and go for.
Yeah, totally. So my audience will know, if they've been listening to this series, that I've wanted to talk to my guests a little bit more in this series about times where they've potentially had some negativity. So some guests have brought negative reviews or been some internet trolling and stuff like that. And actually, while chasing you for this stuff, you're like, there hasn't been a great deal of this, and that's fine. I've had people like that as well. But you did mention one article that was written and put on the Mail Online when the announcement of this reboot of the show How came out. And I think it's really interesting, actually, because even though this kind of shitty article doesn't mention the presenters of the new show, I am intrigued how reading that article made you, as the person in the knowledge that you were going to be presenting it, feel about the potential of there being a shitstorm when it starts coming out.
Well, it was weird because the article was just bait to the kind of readers that would be furious that, for example, the concept of the article was the possibility that the new version of How wouldn't do a Native American hand gesture at the end of the show, which is traditionally how the previous iterations of the show have finished. So it didn't even know for sure. It was just a guess that this probably won't happen.
No, totally. Sorry to interrupt, but just for the audience, yeah. I'm going to read that headline, just the headline. It says, iconic ITV kids show How is set for a comeback 15 years after being axed, but presenters are unlikely to perform Native American hand raise as it may be deemed inappropriate.
Yeah, which is so weird. It's such a weird thing that someone went down and went, how might be coming back? What can we write about that? What about the best episodes? Or no, I tell you what, they're probably not going to do that hand gesture, are they? No, probably not, because it's absolutely unnecessary. So what? Yeah, let's upset everybody. It's just really weird. Like, the mindset behind writing it is bizarre. And then the comment section was exactly what they wanted. And it was one of those things, if I'm honest, when I read it, I started laughing because I thought the people that, some of the things that were written genuinely were appalling.
It's worth asking you this because you've worked in journalism, I think, more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think now there are people whose jobs, particularly at places like Mail Online, whose bosses will say to them, your job is to go through press releases, listen to podcasts, and find things where we could put articles in that will get racist, offensive, abusive comments, because that's engagement. I think that probably happens. Do you think that's possible based on your knowledge of journalism? Is it probably not as on the nose as that?
I think that, I'm sure I'll phrase this terribly. I think that journalism for the most part is dead. I think that the king in all of these things is engagement, and engagement has no compass for what is good, what is bad. It's just reaction. So if you can put something on Twitter that makes 50% of the people absolutely furious and 50% of the people incredibly defensive, you've got absolute gold. It doesn't matter what you've written. It doesn't matter what the content is. Like this article, for example, is perfect. There's no news to it. It has the word unlikely in its prediction in the title. It's not news. It has no information. But it made loads of people really angry. And their hope would be, the response would be, exactly this conversation. People are now defending the idea of you not doing a Native American hand gesture if you're not Native American and saying hello to somebody. So that's all we have now. Like, clickbait is so real. Beyond, like, when people write it on headlines, people all, like, on Twitter, you just, like, quote it on clickbait. But it's so much deeper and so much more important to those industries, because news now survives from advertising. Advertising, if it's online, are paying per clicks on the page. The clicks on the page don't care if they love the article or hate the article. They just need that click. So if you can create a piece of content that will polarize everybody, you will get that engagement. You will get those clicks. You will get replies that say, delete your account. Your newspaper is scum. They don't care. They're getting the response. That's all that matters. And they can take that information and they can show their clicks and their responses and their engagement percentages to the advertisers. They can charge a bit more money. And so I think actual journalism is so limited. And as someone who likes football, you see that now. Like, people talk, I'll use Ryan Giggs as an example. People talk about Ryan Giggs and go, yeah, but he only got like four assists when United won the treble, entirely irrelevant, because the game of football is not totally boiled down to statistics. And the shape of teams, the formation, everything's different. But at the moment, everything is just online to be divisive.
Yeah, it's very true, and well, it was very well put, in fact, Sam, but also very bleak.
And
one of the reasons I wanted to ask you about it is because actually, I now think that there are a few journalists who are listening to this podcast just in the hope that there's something newsworthy that comes up, because we've had a few examples, and the most recent one was we had Lulu Popplewell on, who's a comedian.
Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, and she was, she was a child actor in Love Actually, played the lobster.
Yeah.
And all she said in this podcast was, I don't really like the film. You know, she's an adult now. It's not my it's not my type of film, basically, is what she said. And she said that she remembered Hugh Grant on set and he didn't like kids. And that's it, right? And then the Mail jumped on it, and the comments were so abusive to her; it was untrue. And then the Metro grabbed it off the Mail. It was actually in the physical edition of the Metro, that's unbelievable. And some other publications jumped on it as well. And poor Lulu, you know, who just gave such a great interview and was just such a lovely person, started having to tweet about how much abuse she was getting, and most of it, of course, was about how she looks and stuff, which is completely, you know, ridiculous and so abusive and cruel. And I was just thinking, like, you know, this podcast has like a growing audience and an engaged audience. But I think that the only way the press got hold of that is because they now have people listening to podcasts just looking for cheap stories. And it's really bizarre to me anyway.
Yeah, but I think you're right. It's horrible that happened.
Yeah, really cruel. Okay, Sam, it's been a great interview. I'm going to move into just the quickfire quiz before asking the last question. What's the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you because of being, and I'm going to say famous, but I know you don't think you are, but you know, because of being in the public eye?
I seem to embarrass myself.
I mean, you did say the 40,000 people thing is up there.
That was pretty good. I'll tell you what I did that was pretty embarrassing. There's definitely going to be better things than this, but I'm on the spot. When filming How, I broke my elbow.
And how did you do that? I'm sorry.
I can't go into too much detail because the show isn't out yet, but I was trying to complete a challenge, and it was very clearly something to approach with caution. And I did not approach with caution.
No.
And I was wearing elbow pads and a helmet and all sorts of safety stuff.
Well, I imagine it being very similar to that famous clip where Tom Cruise broke his ankle during the filming of Mission Impossible.
Yeah, a bit like that, but far less cool.
Yeah, far less cool. Okay, what's the best thing about being famous, Sam?
I don't know if anyone's ever given me any free stuff, so I can't say that.
You might get something from the journalists at the Mail Online.
Oh God, I don't know if I want it. People are kind, mostly, I think. And when you meet people, do you know what? So, people send me, this is a good one. I think mostly due to the Mail Online podcast that we do, that people will reach out with their own stories when they've heard something that has touched them. And it's really wonderful to think that you can be involved with somebody, because I think my biggest worry when it comes to work and stuff is like, I don't know, like making a difference at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I sometimes think, especially like now when you think about what's happening in the world, and there are people doing extraordinary things. Like my wife is a primary school teacher, and literally every day she's going in and she's impacting the lives of 30 people.
Of
and you think, boom, that's amazing. And you know, it's really hard work. And I just sort of clown around and have just a wonderful time. I don't really make any difference. But with that, sometimes you get messages from people and things we've done have made a difference. And that is bloody lovely.
Yeah, no, that must feel really good. Sam, final question, knowing all that it entails and with the benefit of hindsight, would you give fame up if you had the chance, by which I mean you'd have the same financial life, you'd have the same personal life, you would just never, ever have anyone come up to you and say, I saw you on Scrambled or Man United's podcast?
That's a great question. I think, if I am honest, The answer is no.
Good. Be honest. I like the honesty.
Yeah. And I don't know why. I just think I probably wouldn't. And for no, I don't have a reason for it. I just think that's what my instinct said. No, I wouldn't. That's, to be honest, I mean, it's every now and again, it's quite fun. If I like, sometimes I'll be somewhere, and not, it doesn't happen very often. There might be like a kid with their mum, and they'd be like, oh, that's, and you'd be like, oh, that's quite cool.
Yeah.
And like, it's a nice little boost in the afternoon if you're...
Totally. When I used to present the Spurs channel, because we worked together when Sam worked on a Man United channel and I worked on a Spurs fan channel, I actually would get some of that from Spurs fans. I also got a bit of abuse from Spurs fans as well, but I found it sometimes quite awkward, I have to say.
Yeah,
And I think you're probably better at dealing with it than me, but I found it slightly awkward. But when it was, I found it more awkward when it was adults than when it was kids, to be honest, because the kids had a bit of kind of wonderment in their eyes about meeting someone I guess they'd seen on YouTube.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. But it's not really real, is it? It's all sort of fun. I imagine if you asked like Justin Bieber that question, it would be very different.
No, exactly. And we've got him on next week, so super. All good.
Yeah.
Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show. Is there anything you'd like to plug? What have you got? Where can they find you on social media? You obviously got How coming out. What date does that come out?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, great. Okay.
This month, it'll be out in November on ITV. I think it's really good. I'm really excited about it. I think mostly just, I don't know, just going to plug being nice. I quite like yoga. I was doing this thing on YouTube. It's got Yoga with Adrian. Bloody loved it. It's really nice.
Who's Adrian?
I know she's I think she's an American woman. She's certainly North American, I think American. She could be Canadian. And she does yoga. Do that in the evening. She does videos. They're only sort of like 20 minutes, half an hour. Really good.
I did tell the audience on at least two occasions that Sam is the loveliest man, and he's just plugged somebody else's work when given the opportunity to plug his own. So
that's really good.
That really sums it up. Sam, thanks again so much, guys. Please do press that subscribe button on Almost Famous. Rate the podcast and leave us a comment too. Find us on Instagram at Almost Famous the Podcast and on Twitter at Pod Almost Famous. And also, please check out my new podcast, It's Your Funeral, a lighthearted look into the most important day of guests' afterlives. And give it a follow on Instagram at PodIt'sYourFuneral. And we'll be back for another edition of Almost Famous very soon. Thanks so much for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.